You're listening to the Local Open Mic Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Heath. Today, we introduce you to Nicola Vasquez. Professionally known as Nicola, her amazing career has seen the release of four successful CD projects, along with a number of hit singles in between. As if her resume isn't impressive enough, this independent singer-songwriter spent 2 years on Broadway as part of the cast of Les Miserables. That's right, Les Miserables. Stories abound in this interview, not the least of which is the story behind her latest release, The Distance. It is a deeply personal song written as lockdowns and longtime relationships were ending. In addition to the release of The Distance, Nicola talks about the stories behind two more of her songs that will make you want to become a fan and follow her career. Well, we have with us today Nicola Vasquez. Did I pronounce that right?
You did. Actually, you did. That's great.
Yeah.
Hi.
Yeah. How are you? It's nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too, and thank you for having me on the podcast.
Well, my pleasure. And after I started to dial into your music, I was really excited to have the chance to talk with you. We came to know each other through, I believe it was Rory Kelly.
That's right.
She's
an incredible singer-songwriter.
Yeah, she really is. And I've interviewed her. I've interviewed her father and probably a number of her friends at this point. All very talented. And that led to you.
Well, thank you. I'm so honored and glad. And I mean, that's part of what the independent music scene does. You know, we help each other.
Yes, yes, it is. And so, I mean, I'm just thrilled to have you here. So why don't you tell us what's going on with you now? Because I think your fans are going to want to hear the exciting news that you have coming up and what's going on. You know, just whatever you think's important. This is your time for the first part of this interview.
Well, the biggest thing that I have going on right now is the release of my new single, which is called The Distance. And it's been 6 years since the last release. And that has never happened, but I think the pandemic had something to do with it. I don't want to blame the pandemic on everything, but I definitely felt less prolific and less creative during that time. It was, you know, didn't you feel like everything sort of felt like we were in survival mode? Anyway, we got to this point where I just said, okay, the pandemic is coming to a close and I've got to put out something. I've got to start really writing, you know, seriously writing again. And it just poured out of me the song that was about love and loss. It's the despair of losing that great love. It's many things. It's many layers. It's the physical and emotional distance that's created when two lovers in close proximity can no longer find their way back to one another, and they continue to push each other farther and farther away. But also, it's the feeling of that lockdown certainly created that isolation kind of a feeling. You know, this distance, and I hadn't really thought about it, was like an underlying layer of this song. But the good news is that when that cloud sort of lifted, and it did lift, we didn't think it was going to lift, but when it did lift, it felt like there was so much there to draw from and so much there to mine. And this song just came pouring out of me. And it definitely was inspired by a friend of mine whose relationship was very similar to what the song is about, and this song about love and loss. And, you know, it was a labor of love because I had never been that involved. I've always been involved in all my releases. Not like I haven't been involved, but it's not like, well, I just let someone else do my release and I just come in. But no, I mean, I've had producers and other people who sort of wore some of the principal hats. And in this one, I couldn't really find this sort of body of people that was there to pick from, you know, guitar, electric players or cello players. So I had to write electric parts and play them. And that was something that I had never done. I fancy myself as a pretty good, solid rhythm acoustic as well as electric player, but not a lead player or anything like that, nor am I skilled at writing parts and cello parts I even wrote. So, but I don't know where it came from. Maybe music school way back when, like orchestration and all those courses that they force you to take back in music. And it just came out of me. And I just sat down and I did it because out of necessity, I had to. And it was really something special to me because I was able to say, oh, I had a hand in helping write the bass line. Oh, I wrote the cello parts. Oh, I wrote the electric and I played the electric. Well, you know, nobody else did that. I did that. And I co-produced it with my drummer, Michael Caraschillo, who's really skilled at a lot of instruments and a lot of, you know, putting things together. So I think the labor of love aspect of this is just so, it took a while to get it all, you know, tracked and mixed and mastered and all of that stuff. But in the end, it was a product that I was and am really proud of. And even the video was like that too. Like so many things had to come together.
Why don't we get to letting your fans hear The Distance?
Sure.
Here we go.
This anymore. Draw the line in the sand, round and round, here we go. Push and pull, give and take, lock and load. Rise in the night. Who is wrong? Who will fight when neither will say goodbye? Push and pull, give and take, rock and roll.
Amazing song.
Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you.
And you know, I paid special attention to the cello in there.
Oh yes. I was listening to that myself again, having spoken about it. Oh, yeah. It was
brilliant. I mean,
thank you.
How many people overuse something that becomes a new toy, right? They haven't done something for a while, right. So they just That was beautiful. That was really good. What a great song too. It has a lot of good hooks in it that I think will resonate with people about going the distance. And I like that little, there's a lyric line you have in there about lock and load.
Yeah, it's whole opposing forces, isn't it? You know, where you've got people like the push and pull in a relationship, and the push back, and you push and I pull, and then we lock and load, and we don't, it's like an impasse. Kind of a thing, you know?
Yeah. And it creates an image, right? And that's what we want to do, not just with the sonic part of our music, but the vocal and lyrical landscape. We want that imagery to take place.
And there's also this, I don't know if you caught this, but there is a waltz. Without it being a waltz, it's in the 12/8 meter, which is a very, you know, you feel that in ba 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 ba. So it's a very waltz-like kind of a juxtapose with this sort of indie folk rock kind of a thing.
The song,
subliminal.
Yeah,
subliminal.
Yeah, it kind of it lopes along at a very good pace, and it's just, yeah.
Well, it gives you that lilt, kind of the 12/8 or the waltz like feel. It gives you the, it's like sort of the lilting for people that don't necessarily know about musical meters. You kind of feel like you're ebbing and flowing, you know, boom, ba, ba, boom, ba. You know, it's like an ocean coming, you know, the tide coming in and out. Does that make sense? I don't know if that makes sense to the listeners, but
does to me.
It's like, what do you mean tide and ebbing and flowing? And no, but I think if you listen to any kind of waltz, be it a Chopin waltz, be it a Dave Matthews has a lot of songs that are in 12/8 or 3/4 time, that or 6/8, you know, where you feel that same kind of, there's a something very urgent in a waltz that you don't always get when the music is in like a 4. Am I getting really technical now?
No,
okay, I'll shut up.
Not for me, but you know, some of the best songs that have ever been written with lyrical additions to it are 3/4s, are waltzes, you know. What came to mind here just a moment ago was Moon River. And I was thinking of that. Moon River, Moon River, wide.
Well, that makes you want to get up and dance, you know, with a long, flowing skirt, you know.
And, you know, this is a song that probably people could get on the dance floor, even with all the textures you have in it.
Yeah, maybe.
Let's hope they don't lock and load on the dance floor, right?
No, please, no lock and load.
So,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So,
do not try this at your wedding, please.
Yes. So, by the time people, our fans and my local open mic listeners are listening, of course, this is officially dropped. You can get it at all the streaming outlets. You can go to Nicola's website.
It'll be right there. You just click and it'll take you to the site. Yeah.
And there you are. So, and we'll have links to all of her social media in the liner notes for the show notes for the podcast. So be sure to check those out. So let's get to know you a little more, Nicola. Why don't we go back to your roots, you know?
Yeah, well, I was born and raised in New York City, if you can believe that.
You and 12 million other people.
I know. I'm like born and raised here. I've lived in so many other places, but I was born in the Lower East Side. I've got a sort of a mixture of a lot of cultures in my background, but both my parents were born here, but there's European and Argentinian and all kinds of stuff. It's a big mishmash, but in a good way,
you know,
think that's what New York is, a big melting pot. So I was born here, and when I was 7, I wanted to play guitar very, 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 very much so. I don't know why, but, you know, as a child, you see an instrument and maybe you see someone playing it and you say, oh, I want that. And I definitely wanted that. I don't think that I picked it. I think it picked me. I always say that about music. You get this thing and it's like a calling. And it's not like in a religious way, like where, you know, they're going, oh, you know, and it comes down to you. But you just feel it and it grabs you and it doesn't release you. And so anyway, my dad said, well, we'll give you a guitar, but you got to practice. And he didn't think that I would really practice, I think, at 7, because what 7-year-old has, you know, real discipline to practice. But I was so riveted by it, so intrigued. I practiced every day. I started writing songs. I went on to study at Manhattan School of Music preparatory division. And I went to the FAME school, the High School of the Arts, yep. the LaGuardia. I studied music and theater and dance and piano and all these other things at the Queen's College, Aaron Copland School of Music, okay. which was really super duper. And I subsequently decided that I, at that point in time when I graduated, I had all these different sort of genres and realms, and I was straddling the world of theater and pop and rock music, and I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. So I thought, well, let me see if I can do it all. And it wasn't really possible. So at different periods of my life, I guess the way that I think about it or explain it best is that I was either very focused on music and writing and touring, being in like local top 40 bands and things like that. And I moved to Nashville at one point and came back. And then I said, oh, I want to be in theater. And so I sort of stopped all my songwriting, put it on hold, I would say.
Yeah.
And right. focused more on theater.
And so tell us a bit about yeah. your theater background.
Yeah, I came to New York and I said, I was in Nashville. I had moved to Nashville. By the way, I lived in a campground for 3 weeks. I ran away from home. I didn't run away like a runaway, but I didn't tell my parents that I was going to Nashville.
Bye-bye.
And I think that, yeah, I was like, you know, that was before cell phones too. And so they were like, where is she? You know, what is she doing? And I didn't have I told them I had a place to live. And basically, I was living in the campground for 3 weeks until I found a place to live. But I ended up staying there and getting a lot of music work. But there was a point in time where I just decided that I wanted to come back to New York and I wanted to get an agent. And I just was focused and said, you know, I'd like to try Broadway. I don't know what possessed me, but, you know, it was part of my background. And I thought, you know, this is just something I want to give a shot to.
Sure.
So I did. I sort of circulated in that community. And I think things were different then. I think that things were a lot easier than they are now. We're just living in a much more economically depressed time and the market is saturated. But at that time it was like, oh, I'll get an agent. And I got an agent. And then, the next thing I know, I was in Les Mis for 2 years, Les Mis on Broadway. And then I toured with the company and it was amazing. It was really amazing. It was like, now to try to do the same thing, I think it's just it's not to the same degree. I think it's much more difficult.
And who were you in Les Mis?
I was a understudy for Madame Thénardier, who is okay. the comedic sort of villainous woman. Yeah. And when I wasn't on it, the very like homely, ugly, horrible, wicked, it's like a wicked witch, you know, but she was a comedic wicked witch. When I wasn't on as her, because she was my understudy role, I was on as like 8 different chorus roles nightly.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, it was such a fun time. So a lot of times people will say like, well, why don't you just focus on one thing? Or why are you trying to do it all? Or what? And I always, you know, cause I teach music as well. And I tell my students, look, everything that you do enhances everything that you do. So it all the genres and all the realms somehow feed into each other. Your live music show will be enhanced by theatrical background, and your live theatrical show will be enhanced by the fact that you're a musician. I mean, I see it that way. Maybe people would disagree with me, you know, but this is the way I see it.
So name drop a little here. Who were you with on stage and all of that? People want to know that stuff.
Oh, well, Ricky Martin came in when I was in Melba Moore.
Okay.
Oh, gosh, do those names ring a bell to you?
Oh, yeah.
Sure. I'm trying to think. There was a famous, Debbie Gibson was there.
Gibson,
remember Debbie Gibson?
I
oh,
sure
my
do,
God.
From the 80s.
She was like an 80s Debbie Gibson. I'm trying to think.
But she's got a good voice, you know.
She does. And she played Fantine. So it was very... it was like a popular thing for them to bring in stars, pop stars.
Yep.
I mean, they do it now as well in different shows because it generates more income and popularity, and it's a hot ticket.
Yep.
You know, so your audience is like, oh, I'll go see it if Ricky, I mean, Ricky Martin, he's a doll. He's an amazing person. He's super talented. He is super, super talented, and he's just the nicest, most humble human being you could ever, ever possibly want to work with or know.
You know, if he's if a person can survive the early onset of fame, they start to become humble after a while. You look at all the stars that have been around for any length of time, and they have a tremendous amount of humility about what the gift they really have been given, because there's talented people everywhere. And so for these people to break out is humbling. You know, they don't always think that in the beginning. They think they all, you know, well, I deserve it because I'm that much better. And then you realize there are some other people pretty good that just never got their shot. And
that's right. Because this business, and you know, some people will know and some people won't know when they listen, but now they'll know that the music and the arts business, shall we say, theatrical, music, film, all of it is so not what it seems. People always think that just because you have talent or ability, or you studied in school and you got your degree, or you just put all your time and dedication into it, that you will become, you know, just like you go to medical school, you become a doctor.
Yeah,
easy peasy. Not easy at all. But you pretty much, it's like kind of a shoe-in. Like, you know, you're going to get some job somewhere. But it's not that way in the arts. You can graduate, you can do all the right things, and you can just put all your effort and gumption there, and you still won't necessarily be in that like upper echelon of, I don't know, the 1/4% of people who are quote unquote famous or just celebrities. So it was never my aspiration to be famous. I'm not famous, so I'm glad it didn't work out. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, I don't think fame is a goal or an aspiration. It was just always my goal to be a working artist. And that is what I was able to attain. And that for me is success. You know, as people say, they define success by fame. And I definitely don't. I definitely don't. So.
Well, I would define it by earning a good living.
Yes.
And if you can earn a good living at it, then boy, it just feels good to earn a living at something that you love to do like that. So, yeah.
Well, it's a struggle. It's a struggle for us independent, unsigned musicians, because we work a lot and we work really hard. And sometimes now with technology being the way it is, and the industry being the way it is, we have to keep up. We have to wear many more hats. Like, we have to be directors and producers and writers and film videographers and editors and do all our social media and do our booking. And just a day in the life of a musician is incredible.
Yep.
Not complaining, but you wouldn't even, I mean, you know how it is. It's just, you just don't write a song and go, okay, and I'm just going to perform tonight on stage. Like, it's all that goes into the before and the during and the after.
Yeah. So I tell you what, let's talk more about some of that. Tell us first about your song Crazy. Let's go into the backstory to that, and we'll let the fans hear Crazy.
Oh, Crazy is a love song. Gosh, that's two love songs. You know, I feel like there's certain categories of songs, you know, that people will default to, and most often they're love or despair. there's definitely political opposites. Songs and there's comedic songs, but I think those make for some of the, you know, your more sort of like prolific work. You'll find if you dig through the bodies of your favorite, not the bodies, the body of work of your favorite songwriters, you'll probably find much of the same. But in my case, this is such a love song. It's like that freeze frame, you know, when you first meet somebody and you're living in that glow of, I don't know where this is going. I don't know what will happen. But I know that, and there is a line in there that this freeze frame may never come again. It's like a snapshot. It's like, oh, don't let your breath go. Like, hold your breath and just take it in, and we can live this moment forever. It's just, it's that glow, that feeling, that euphoria of when you meet that person and your heart is just a flutter. And we've all been there.
We've all been there. a number of times.
And I'll say yes a number of times, you know, yeah. Some more than others. You know. And there's no shame in that.
You know,
yeah.
I don't feel ashamed at all.
No, I wasn't pointing that at you. No, I'm just saying, like, for anybody listening, it's like, so, you know, you've been there 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you know, that's the way love works. I mean, the heart is an amazing, complex thing. I have a lot of songs in my body of work that are also, that came out of anger and so maybe there are more categories than just love and despair. I was joking around, but there's definitely the angry, I'm gonna, you know, throw a rock in your window kind of a song. And there's the empowering kind of song. There's more than two categories, but I just think that the bulk of songs poetry seem to fall into those. Don't you think they kind of fall into those two categories?
Oh, because that's the bulk of them. Yeah. Yeah. Anger is, I would put anger in there also, but
I think anger. Yeah.
Anger is like I don't know if depression is a subset of anger or anger is a subset of, or if it's
maybe
the other way around.
Maybe they come together.
They come together. Yep. Yeah, they do. Yeah. So let's get to that song. And before I turn it on here for the fans, that was on a compilation project, wasn't it? I saw.
No, that wasn't on a compilation. That was on my third album called Don't Take It Personally.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Maybe I think what you're thinking of is that there were two renditions of, or two versions of that particular album title. We produced, it's a very long story, which I'll make very short, okay. But the first, he's like, we really don't have time for this, Nicola, but the first time around, put out an album called Don't Take It Personally, and Crazy was one of the songs on it. There were other songs on it, and I had a manager at that time. He decided that there were some songs on there that he felt should come off, and other ones should be put in their place, and so he was going to try to get me a record deal with a subsidiary of Universal. And so in the process, we created a deluxe edition in which we put a video of one of my songs on there, and we took some songs off and put other songs on, and basically just repackaged it, took new pictures and slapped a new label on it, and it became Don't Take It Personally sort of version 2. And I never got the record deal, but I got two versions of the same album.
Two products out of it.
That's probably what you were thinking. Maybe therein lies the confusion.
You did what the Beatles did. They would have a U.S. release and a European release of some of their albums, and
without their money.
Yeah, and right. Yeah, without there is that unfortunate caveat, isn't there? So let's get to Crazy. Here we go.
Okay. All right.
One of those moments, this freeze frame won't come again. No, it won't. You're kinda like a solar eclipse, baby, and I don't want to close my somebody. Oh my, ain't it crazy just to know you're mine. This is one of those instances. You just cannot press the rewind. No, you can't. I don't wanna breathe. Don't wanna miss a thing, no. So I just stand here. Won't close my eyes. Just cannot contain it in a jar. No, you can't. Ain't no need strong enough to hold it. Nothing can keep me from where you are. Gonna go crazy. What's my welcome done?
Wonderful song.
Thank you. So yeah. There's something I forgot to mention about that song that I was, as I was listening to it, because it's been a while that, you don't normally like put your own albums on and like, oh, let me just listen to my music. Anyway. You know, you play it, but you don't listen to the album rendition. But when I wrote that song, the lead guitar part is actually in the acoustic. That's just like a little trivia thing. And we wrote the rhythm part. The rhythm guitar got arranged, that was the wah and that's the reggae guitar. So the usually the acoustic plays rhythm and the electric plays the lead, and this was the opposite. So it's kind of an interesting, and then you have this walking bass line, which kind of goes along with the reggae feel. It's just a feel good song. You know, people would always say like, oh yeah, just a feel
good
song.
I felt good.
Well, good. Hopefully everybody listening feels good. Yeah. I feel good. He's James right. Gonna do James Brown now. Yeah.
I feel good. Yep. So I wouldn't do a great James Brown. So I'll end it with that. So now you produced this song, again, when you were in New York.
Yeah, that album we did, we tracked it and mixed and mastered. I don't remember where we mastered, but I know that we tracked and mixed out in a studio in New Jersey where my former drummer and producer was living and working. So that was, relatively close to New York, like New Jersey for those people that are not familiar. It's like right over the bridge.
It's the New York sound, right? That's radio ready.
Thank you. Yeah, well, that one was definitely on the radio, college radio and small stations. Whenever we'd go play places and go on tour, we'd always try to hit a local radio station, which right now, a lot of things, Sirius FM and satellite stuff, so there aren't the same kind of local city, little town radio is kind of, I won't say defunct, but kind of, sort of,
kind
right?
Kind of is. Tell us about your busking. And before we get started, do you publish when you're going to be busking? Is there a place your fans can go to and say, oh, she's going to be in the subway at this station at a certain time? And
well, I sort of pick and choose which busking places I put on my website. And the reason is because a while ago, I used to put all of them there.
Oh, okay.
And then people would, I would have like weird stalkery kind of people. Is that even a word? I don't know. Stalkery kind of people.
It is now.
It is now. And they would show up. And I'm telling you, Tim, they were scary. And I just decided that maybe it was best that some people just not know in advance, and maybe it was more serendipitous, but, you know, right. I just didn't want those people. I just felt like for safety reasons, I stopped. But the place that I do publish is when I play, like, the ferry terminal. If people come to New York and they ride the free ferry across the bay to Staten Island, it's like a big thing. So we get hordes of tourists. And I feel like there's security there. There's cops there. I feel well protected. Yep. So I'm, and a lot of times people will come out specifically just to hear me play there because it's a huge terminal. So to answer your question, yes and no.
Yeah. So what I find, we were talking about technology before and what artists can do. And you've done, of course, very well for yourself by comparison to any of these people that I know. But a whole busking culture has sort of sprung up in some cities in Europe, not so much in the States. I mean, New York has that vibe with, you know, the subways, and then when symphonies break, you know, there's some places where there are buskers. I find that when you start to busk, you take control of your career in today's world because you have video, you have all of that, and you're able to control your image, even as a busker. And, you know, if you do it regular, so it intrigued me that you bus, cause I know a few people that I've talked with, they don't see the value in busking for them. And I think that's a tragedy because like you have a lot of fans that come out specifically to see you. And maybe these are people that could never afford to go to a concert, or maybe it's a geographic limitation. It could be a lot of things. You know, but they get to see you and maybe say hi and
they come to that. All of that is definitely true. And there's a lot of reasons to busk and I can name a few, but the program that I'm in, which is a professional program, all the musicians are professional musicians,
right?
And they do have to audition for this program. So it's a pretty stringent, set of things you have to go through to be accepted. And once you're accepted, they give you a banner, they give you a permit card, you call in every 2 weeks to sign up for your locations, and it's all very above board. It's really great. And it's not authorized, but what's the word I'm looking for? It's sanctioned, and it's run by the Arts for Transit, which is part of Metropolitan Transit Authority. So they run it, and they provide an avenue for us to do this, but ironically, they don't pay us. So in a perfect world, utopian world, this would be a federally funded program for the arts, you know, or a citywide program which Arts for Transit would run and they would pay us, but they don't. They give us the permits, they give us the banners, they tell us we can go out there and basically like a waiter in a restaurant, you know, you make your tips, you keep all your tips, and that's the way it goes. And you're allowed to do that, which is a great thing, a great way to get people on your mailing list, a great way to get other jobs. I've gotten so much work from it because people just happen to be walking by and you're there playing. And it's like, wait a second, I didn't know who this person was. Now, like everyone has big, you know, these retractable banners that you see. All the artists now are like, it's like the new thing because you can carry it with you and it just, you just pull it up all the way up and then it retracts all the way down. And it's like
seen
a
that.
Giant.
I haven't
oh,
seen
yeah.
that.
Oh,
no.
yeah. Like, no, like it's since, like now you have to, it's like every 5 seconds I feel like, oh, I have to get the new, you know, and it has the QR code on it. It's got your picture, got your website. And the QR codes are great because people don't take postcards anymore and don't do hard copy stuff. And it's bad for the environment. So they just take photos of the QR code. You know, they scan the QR code and then boom, they're right at your site. They can donate via PayPal or Venmo or Cash App or
one of them.
One of those sort of modems, you know, of donation. And it's a good thing because a lot of people, at least here in New York, find themselves not carrying any cash.
Right.
So I think it's been a boon. So any gig, I'm taking that banner with me too. And people are all about scanning the QR code. And then also, if they don't want to donate, they can just at least go to your website. They can sign up on your mailing list. Sometimes people want to book you, so your EPK is there. It's all like one-stop shopping.
Yep.
I'm really into the whole QR code thing. I'm like, how come it took them so long to get on board with us, you know?
So when you go busking, do you have people videotape you for, you know, to capture the performances?
A lot. And I try to tell them to tag me on Instagram or just send me clips. And sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But I try to encourage them because then I can get that footage and I can put it up. And it's valuable and it's useful because it's all third-party endorsement, right? If I take a video of myself, it's very different than if somebody else captures it. You know, it really is third. It's really like, oh, I saw her, I liked her, and now I took this clip rather than me going, look at me, you know.
And that can actually work both ways, right? Where, you know, people that you know, some of the buskers that I follow, they almost exclusively just set up a cell phone to videotape them because nobody else will. They can't guarantee that they're going to get an email back, and then they stick it on their channel, and you know,
that's true. That I've seen that. That I can't be bothered because I feel like, I mean, it's definitely valid and I applaud them for doing that, but I'm just like challenged to like set it all up and keep it all going. And then I don't want someone to like steal my phone if it's out, you know, that's a consideration, like, you know, those are the downsides, I guess, of busking too, like where I have been stolen from, where I have almost had an ice pick in my back from a crazy lady. And so you've got your head, seriously, and you've got your head on a swivel the whole time. So the less things that I have to focus on, the better. And I can be focused on my surroundings. And because 99% of the people are awesome.
Oh,
but
yeah,
there's this 1% of the people that are not all there. And they are mentally unwell, and they have to be watched or reported, or, you know, like, I didn't see the lady come in behind me at Union Square with an ice pick. I did not see her at all because she came in behind me and there were so many people. And Union Square is a big subway station for people that are unfamiliar with that particular subway station in New York City. Yep. And somebody did see her approach me from behind and did see the ice pick. And came and grabbed her. Thank God. I would have been stabbed with an ice pick.
And that's not a good thing to have on a resume. You know,
that's not a good way to go. I just don't see that as like going, you know, going with your bootstraps, you know. Yeah, it's like not the way to go.
Okay, this took a dark turn here. So I'll tell you what, let's get to one last song here. Tell us about the backstory to One Life.
Oh, we're doing One Life. So One Life is yet another story about love lost. It's the sad... Yes, it is love lost, but it's that it was inspired by my brother whose marriage was really, really, really falling apart. And this one line kept sticking in my head. If you, and I can't even think of it now, of the chorus, I have only one life to show, a love that you don't want to know. If you find no reason to stay, you can take my heart when you go. And it just, some part of that was circulating in my head. Thing about the heart and taking the heart if you go. And I knew that I just had to write a song about the idea of we only have this one life and it's very limited and it's very short. And if your love, if I can't be in your life and I can't be that love in your, that great love anymore, maybe we were once, but we're no longer, then I'm okay, as sad and as maybe despairing as it sounds, for you to to have my heart and to know that maybe you had it once and you're taking it with you. And I will know that was something, and that's a piece of me that you now have, if that makes sense. It's also an empowering song. It's the rhythm and the drive of it. It starts slow as a ballad. It is a ballad ultimately, but there's a drive and a rhythmic sort of thrust when you'll hear with the drums and the bass and all that's orchestrated within it. And it becomes sort of this empowering song.
So why don't we get to One Life?
And I need to know if life is that poetic. Can we find the answers in the stanzas of time? Are we getting more prolific? Or getting older and not so wise? Why must we read between the lines? When you go,
that's a powerful song.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I looked for that lyric line, you know, that you were talking about. And Yeah.
There's that line. Yeah,
where you go into it and then you slow down and it creeps up and let it go. Yep.
Yes.
Good. Very good.
Yeah.
So it's been wonderful talking with you, Nicola.
Well, thank you. It's been really great to be a guest on your show, and I really enjoyed our conversations and the things that we sort of dealt, you know, expounded on and delved into.
Yeah, I'm pretty free form. I don't have a sheet of bullet points I have to cover. I mean, we, like you said earlier, some interviews are very organic. They just go where they go.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
And that's what'll make, you know, your appearance here on Local Open Mic unique. So Nicola, it has been absolutely wonderful having you here today. Thank you so much for interviewing. And listen, before we go, tell our fans and your fans, more to the point, how they can get in touch with you, how they can join your mail list, and how they can be a part of your social media.
The best thing you can do is go to the website, which is NicolaVazquez.com. And that's NicolaVazquez.com. And right there, you'll see a place to join the mailing list, which is super important because that allows us to sometimes send you merchandise, a gift. We give you gift codes for your birthday, you get t-shirts, things like that, but also new music that comes out and shows if we're coming to your area. And all the social media links are on the website. Everything, you will find it easily navigable, if that's even a word.
It is. And I'll have all those things in the show notes also, so people will be able to have a clickable link. I think we were talking a little bit as a sidebar before we got going about the importance of doing that and how it really is an effective way to support an artist in a very tangible way. So
it's free. It doesn't, all you need to do is just put your email, and it's free. Yeah. And sometimes you get freebies out of it because we do try to, like, there's a place where you can actually fill in your birth date. And I know some people don't like to do that, but if you put in your birth date, at the very least, even if you don't want to put in the right year, that's okay. But if you put in the month and the day, then we can sometimes send you a gift that correlates with your birthday, that we do some offers like that, which are fun. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again for being with us. And we look forward to following your career, and we'll try and catch up for an update at some point in the future when it's either a year has passed or even before, when it seems appropriate to do that.
Sounds great. I'll be there.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That concludes our interview with Nicola Vazquez. I had a great time interviewing her. I hope you enjoyed listening to all the stories and the wonderful music. She can be found on Instagram at Nicola Vazquez Music, on Facebook as Nicola NYC, and at her website, NicolaVazquez.com. I'm Tim Heath for Local Open Mic. Remember, get up on the stage, step up to that microphone. The world is listening.